Many years ago, when I lived in Singapore, there was one young man who we had a mutual friend, and he was 31. He had just gotten accepted to do graduate work at Tulane University in the States. So it was like life looked really good for him. And then he got a cancer diagnosis at age 31. And I remember being with him one day as he was losing his strength. He could no longer go to work, no longer go to school, And we were in an HDB flat, and he was looking out and saying, my life is useless. I can't do anything except sit here all day. I said, how can you say that? Your life has tremendous meaning. We looked down, off the balcony. I said, just because all these people are so busy driving places, do you think their life is meaningful? Yeah, people are so busy going here, going there, doing this, doing that, cutting this business deal, selling this, buying that. Is that what makes life meaningful? I don't think so. No, people keep themselves extraordinarily busy. That doesn't mean their life is meaningful. Doesn't mean they're happy at all. Yeah, keep themselves so busy running around doing all these things. When they die, none of it comes with them. They've never spent any time doing spiritual practice. So I said to him, look, your life, for however long it is, can be highly meaningful. Because you've met the Dharma, you have the opportunity to meditate. You've heard teachings on how to develop equanimity and love and compassion and joy, the four immeasurable thoughts. You've heard teachings on that. You can meditate on that. That makes your life meaningful. You've heard teachings on emptiness, on selflessness. You can contemplate that. That makes your life meaningful. You've heard teachings on how to make offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, how to take refuge. You can do that. That makes your life meaningful. You've heard teachings about sila, ethical discipline. You've taken the five precepts. Keeping those makes your life meaningful. So I said to him, don't think that because you're sitting here in your flat that your life's not meaningful. In the long run, your life can be a lot more meaningful than people who are busy running around, cheating on business deals and doing stuff like that. Okay? So, if we think about it, even things that seem really horrible, like a cancer diagnosis. I mean, we can live with that, can't we? We can still make our life meaningful. Something beneficial can still come out of it. Yeah? And I've very often seen that happen sometimes, actually. When people have terminal diagnoses, their lives suddenly, they just really look at their lives and they decide what's important in their life, and they really start living from their heart. Whereas people who don't realize that actually, in fact, we all have a terminal diagnosis. Because we all do, don't we? Don't we all have a terminal diagnosis? Yeah, being born is a terminal diagnosis. Because as soon as we're born, the only thing we have to do is die. We all have a terminal diagnosis. We don't have the specifics of it yet, but we all know we're going to have to die. But anyway, sometimes the people who have the actual specifics of their terminal diagnosis, their life becomes so much more vibrant because they really think, what's important in my life? And then they do what's important, and they don't space out anymore. They look people in the eye. They look at people with kindness. They connect with people. They don't just use people for their own pleasure. Okay? So, instead of painting stories in our mind about how terrible things can be, I think we need to realize that, we actually can live with a lot of things, and make our life meaningful in a lot of different circumstances. Mm-hmm. Don't you think? Like I've said, I've seen people. It was so sweet. One time I was helping somebody who was dying, and he was in his mid-30s. He had three little kids, you know, twins that were three and a daughter who was five. And he was dying of leukemia. He sat down and he wrote a letter to his children for them to read when they became 16. And he talked about what he had learned in his life. It was such a beautiful letter. During the memorial service, I had to read parts of this letter. But it was so beautiful because you could see, even though he was young, you know, the fact of having a terminal diagnosis made him think very clearly, what's important in my life? What's meaningful? What did I learn from living? What do I want to pass on to my kids? You know? He didn't think, he was quite wealthy, but he didn't think, oh, I'm going to pass on my $1 million to my kids. He didn't put dollar bills in the letter to give to his kids when they were 16. But he wrote and he talked about the importance of friendship, the importance of being a good friend. He talked about the importance of choosing friends wisely, the importance of making good decisions, the importance of doing what you feel in your heart is the best to do, rather than just being pushed by what other people think you should do. Yeah. He talked about these kinds of things, you know, the importance of letting go and realizing that we can't control everything. The importance of being generous to other people, being kind to other people. You know, he emphasized to his kids not doing things that would make us have regret later on in life. Even though things seem good now, if we know that they're going to bring problems later, don't do them. And I thought it was so beautiful because this man clearly had led a meaningful life, even though he died when he was 37. And he had something so valuable to pass on to his kids, you know, the lessons that he learned in his life. And I think his kids are really going to cherish and value this and take it to heart. And that advice is going to be much more meaningful to his kids than all the money that he left them. Yeah. Because his taking the time to write that in a letter to his kids shows his love for his children much more than the money does. Yeah. We can really see that even in spite of, you know, having a terminal diagnosis, it's still possible to have a happy life. Yeah, it's still possible. It was really amazing. It was one of the most unique experiences I've had in helping people who are dying. At his memorial service, his wife, you know, usually you would think, you know, being in your mid-30s and being a widow, you'd be sobbing and hysterical, having three kids and, you know, no husband and, you know, they were high school sweethearts. I mean, you'd think she'd be sobbing and hysterical and totally a basket case. She wasn't. You know, she gave a talk at the memorial service and she had this particular light in her eyes. It was so beautiful. And she was just telling the people everything she learned from her husband, the different things she had learned about life from him, the different things that they had learned about life together, because they had known each other since they were like 15 or 16. And then she said, I'm just going to take all those beautiful things I learned about life, you know, and I'm going to live those now and I'm going to share them with other people. Yeah. So she wasn't crying because her husband was gone. She was rejoicing that she had the time to know him. And she was rejoicing at so much they had learned together. And it was so beautiful to see somebody at a memorial service be like that. And I thought, how fortunate her children are. So what I'm getting at is, even in situations that where we feel, you know, oh, this is the calamity and the worst thing that can happen, not necessarily. So much good can still come out of it. Yeah? So much human beauty can really come out of adversity sometimes. So instead of getting depressed and just looking at, you know, what we don't have and making up all sorts of stories, worst case scenario stories, you know, and making ourselves depressed, if we just step back and see the good that exists in our life and rejoice at it, and then open our hearts with love and compassion towards other beings, yeah, that can make our life so meaningful, so meaningful. Because the thing is, you know, when we focus just on ourselves in an unhealthy way, then we just develop this whole image of poor me. When I was a child, you know, back in the 1920s or 1930s, there was this actress called Sarah Bernhardt, okay, who was very theatrical. Everything was extremely dramatic, okay? Anyway, when I was a child, you know, my mother would tell me I was like Sarah Bernhardt. Because any small problem I had when I was a child, it was like, oh, poor me. Oh. I mean, I remember as a child, get this one. I remember, I don't know what birthday it was, maybe 8th or 9th birthday, but I remember at the end of my birthday, after the birthday party, going in my room and crying because it was going to be a whole year until I had another birthday. You know? This is a very good example of how our mind creates suffering, isn't it? The self-centered mind, you know? I just had this wonderful birthday with my family and my friends, and I got so many gifts. You know, there was so much happiness, so much to rejoice for, and all I could think about is, poor me, I have to wait another year till I have a birthday. I mean, how my parents ever put up with me is a miracle. You know? You think your kids are spoiled. Look at me. I was a brat. Okay? But do you... You know, is the point... Am I getting the point across? That when we only think of ourselves, we turn happiness into misery. Yeah? That's what the self-centered thought does. It just makes us feel sorry about for ourselves. And then we get so dramatic, so theatrical. You know, my suffering. Like nobody else on the planet has ever suffered like that before. Really? I stub my toe. Oh, my toe hurts so much. Poor me. That's all we can think about, isn't it, you know? Oh, my friend didn't say hello to me today. Oh, the economy's bad. Maybe I'll lose my job. Oh, Oh, I have the flu. Oh, I have the sniffles. Maybe I'm gonna die. Maybe it's anthrax. I have the sniffles. I know it's anthrax. Oh, you know. This is what our mind does, doesn't it? You know? I mean, it just makes these incredibly big deals about things. And, you know, what the Buddha is trying to get us to look at is everything that's good in our life. You know? Instead of mourning everything that isn't going well in our life, let's just look at everything that's good. You know? I mean, we wake up and, you know, the alarm clock goes off in the morning. Yeah? So often we go, oh, the alarm clock, I want to go back to bed. Or, oh, I have to go to work today and work with this idiot boss. Can't say that to him, though. Yeah. Oh, my boss, you're so sweet. Okay. But you know, if we only woke up in the morning and said, I woke up, the day started off well. Isn't it? I woke up. The day started off very well. I'm so fortunate to have woken up, you know? And I woke up and I'm here in a safe place. Yeah? I live in a safe country. I have a family, you know? How fortunate I am. I have food in the refrigerator. How fortunate I am. I've met the Buddha's teachings. How fortunate I am. Now, I have so many Dharma friends, you know. I have so many temples. I have this big, beautiful Buddhist library to come where I can meditate and talk about the Dharma and progress on the path to enlightenment. How incredibly fortunate I am. So I think, you know, it's important to see what's going well in our life and use our opportunities. Use what's going well. Okay? So the meditation on precious human life helps us appreciate all the good things going on in our life. Yeah? The meditation on compassion helps us put our own suffering in perspective and realize that actually we can handle our suffering. Okay, I may not have wanted this particular suffering at this particular time, but you know, I can handle it. I can work with this. It's not going to destroy me, you know? And even if I die, I've still met the Dharma. I still have the Dharma. I still have my refuge. Even if I die, nobody can take my refuge in the Triple Gem away. Nobody can take all my positive karma away. If I've spent my life creating good karma, you know, nobody can take that away from me. I might die poor materially, but have a wealth of good karma. How fortunate I am. Okay? So I think it's important to do these meditations, like I said, on precious human life, on compassion, also on Buddha nature. Okay? Contemplate the fact that we have the potential to become a fully enlightened Buddha. Okay? Sometimes we don't get it, you know, we have such limited views of ourself. My teacher used to call it poor quality view. Okay? He said, you have such poor quality view of yourself, you know. I can't do this, I can't do that, you know. I'm not so smart, I'm not so good looking. You know, I don't have as good an education as somebody else does. Somebody else has a better job than me. They're smarter than me. Nobody loves me. You know, other people love this other person more than me. Nobody appreciates me. You know, he said, we have such low self-esteem. Yeah. And you say, but you have the Buddha nature. How can you think something's wrong with you? Now, if you have the potential to become a fully enlightened Buddha, I mean, imagine that. You have the potential to become Kuan Yin. Did you ever think about that? You know? The nature of my mind and the nature of Kuan Yin's mind is the same. I can become like Kuan Yin. Did you ever think about that? I mean, how can we get depressed if we have the ability to become like Kuan Yin? Instead of praying to Kuan Yin, why don't we try and become like her? Try and become like the Buddha. We have the Buddha nature, the Buddha potential. Let's try and become like Shakyamuni Buddha. So, you know, if we think that we have that possibility, that potential, then, you know, we always have a sense of confidence. And that sense of confidence doesn't depend on whether we have a job and how much our income is and whether we're divorced or married or widowed or whatever it is. Because we have the Buddha nature. Nobody can take that away from us. That's the nature of our mind. Okay? So if something's going, you know, we have something very strong going for us right from the get-go. And that the very nature of our mind is pure and untainted with the possibility of becoming a Buddha. Sounds good to me. Yeah? Okay? So I think let's think about these kinds of things and train our mind, you know, to have a positive take on life, a positive, optimistic take on life, because we see that we have the Buddha nature, because we can open our hearts in compassion and love to others. Even if we don't have as much compassion as Kuan Yin, we have a little bit, you know, and a little bit can go a long way. If we open our hearts a little bit to others, then they can keep opening more and more. So let's try.